When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Get all the latest football headlines and bite-sized opinion in the brand new Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Join Mark Smith, Martin Grutten, and a conveyor belt of guests as they dissect all the biggest stories in one small, perfectly formed package. Take 5 to 10 minutes out of your day to stay up to date with everything that matters in football. Whether it's a big result from the night before, a new excuse from Jurgen Klopp, a shocker of a VAR decision, or a new chapter in the ongoing Man United soap opera, we will cover it. All the latest news, every weekday lunchtime, on the Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Look for the Whistleblowers wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Stop Hammer Time. Happy New Year, everyone. This is the first Stop Hammer Time since the Qatari football break. And joining with me to discuss the games we've played so far since that break are writer, journalist, broadcaster, DJ, man of many talents. It's Mark Webster. Hello, Webbo.
Hello there, Phil. And of course, you did leave out their fellow traveller of the North London Link.
That's right. That's right. We're the pillars that hold up that line's entire revenue, aren't we? Us using that line to get there on games pretty much holds up their entire revenue stream.
It was great fun to bump. It's great fun to bump into you, and not least of which is it was a major celebrity bump as well, it transpires, that you told me, because a good pal of yours also got on the North London Link before we arrived at Hackney Wick, who it turns out is related to probably the best goalkeeper.
I would say so, definitely. We've had. Yeah. Yes, my friend Marie Parks joined us, and her dad is Phil Parks. Marie is
amazing.
Great. Is a great person, very funny person, excellent value. Her brother also. Her brother is a giant. Her brother is a giant with enormous hands. And they are really brilliant. And their dad, Phil, obviously we've had on the podcast and is also a brilliant bloke. They are a wonderful family. Sort of funny week, actually. The funny week for old football, what with George Cohen and Pelé in very quick succession. I hope it sort of leads... Well, just one minor uptick for the Pelé thing is I hope there's a really good Pelé doc, it's sort of at least in the offering. A bit like the Queen's death and the Queen Mother's death, it felt like Pelé's been sort of teetering on the edge of bad health for quite a few years now.
Yeah.
And I hope there has been some sort of really great doc being sort of slowly assembled. Because with the advent of things like Sky Documentaries, that channel, there are now really good, there's just been a really good, messy three-part doc. There was a big Maradona one that I think came out of cinemas a few years ago. It'd be great to see a good sort of jog through Pelé's career, because it is an amazing one.
Not like there won't be a queue of the greatest people on the planet to want to be there to take part in that whole conversation. Sylvester Stallone is World War II goalkeeper downwards or upwards.
John Walk, you care to look at. If John Walk is still with us, John Walk will be on it.
Yeah.
It will be amazing. I mean, he's literally, the thing about Pelé is that he became the single word to describe a good footballer. You know what I mean? It's like literally go, well, he's not Pelé, but he, you know, the ginger. It's literally the byword for being good at football was a man's name.
Yes, it's true. You know, Pelé, yes, Pelé like would be it. And equally, I made this point for our brother slash sister podcast, Whistleblowers, is that there's the contemporary term is GOAT, but I'm quite comfortable to refer to him in the same breath as Muhammad Ali and use the term, the old-fashioned term, the greatest.
Yeah, yeah.
And I see him in that light, not least of which is because without him, the other contenders wouldn't exist. He was
that's right.
He's the father of the modern game and just this enormous pioneering figure in the sport. And the weird thing is, Phil, of course, my take is that my access to him was minimal, and I was the right age because, of course, what did we? I had a 1970 World Cup, and then the crumbs off of the table that you get because, of course, there simply wasn't coverage or social media available, and yet he was all pervasive, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Same as me, 70 World Cup. I had those SO coins and all that stuff, you know, I was young, but I sort of remember it and watched some of the games on TV, you know. Amazing.
Turned on the hearing of his death, my immediate thought was to turn to the photograph of him and Bobby Moore at the end of the game, which remains for me as a poignant and special moment in football, because it's my genuine homegrown hero as a kid in absolute bonding moment with the sort of the greatest sportsman in my head as a kid on the planet.
Yeah, extraordinary. It's extraordinary. Sort of, it's pretty audacious of us to make that kind of Pelé West Ham United connection. No, but there.
I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of our own. And of course, George Cohen is like, I was just thinking, obviously, Hursty is still with us. Bobby Charlton's still with us. Is Ray Wilson still with us?
I believe not, actually, sadly.
Right.
Well, do you know that? I feel terrible for taking a punt there, but I think he died not necessarily that long ago. But of course, Ray Wilson's somewhat more immortalized again with us, isn't he? On the Barking Road, on the statue, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But that's, you know, those boys are sort of slowly leaving us, aren't they? The great thing about Jeff Hurst is that he, you know, very palpably aged. But then about 20 years ago, he stopped aging and has stayed the same
age. He didn't bother
anymore. Stayed the same age. It's like he can't be fucked to age anymore.
He does look extraordinarily well, doesn't he? And the joy of that, and there's the other weird thing, is there's this wonderful tribute to Pelé from Neymar. In talking about there wasn't a number 10 until there was Pelé. And I'm going to give him that one. And then there's been a lot of talk subsequently of the great 10s. And, of course, this does exist. And strangely enough, Jeff Hurst's name didn't necessarily get mentioned in that breath.
No.
But equally, what you have to kind of remember, he was a 10 who didn't play as a 10 either. He was a kind of 10 who was a 9. Because Bobby Charlton was a 9 who was a 10.
That's right.
Confusing times.
Yeah. I think decimalisation was what sorted all that out.
It was a 10 in 9 in old money. You're right.
Yeah, that's right. Numbers were just all over the place. Then in 1971, the Heath government, I believe, came in and just sorted it all out and right. 10 of everything. I mean, 10 of everything.
Yeah. Covers it. Yeah. 10 bob performance. Towards. Yes, exactly.
It made the 12 days of Christmas much shorter.
Exactly. But before decimalisation, that's what it was the one thing that survived decimalisation, wasn't it?
Yeah. After that, everything was standardised, wasn't it? Bloody euro.
Except all of America's measuring, you know, but apart from that. Yeah.
So we were there on Thursday night. I also went to the Arsenal away fixture last Monday. And We haven't done one of these. In fact, we didn't do one after the Leicester game, and that's three games, seven conceded, one scored, and that was a penalty. I think we all walked away from the game on Friday, you know, fearing for David Moyes' you know, professional life at this club, but also perhaps thinking it's the only way to go. It was interesting, wasn't it? I mean, again, like many of the games this season, the stats have put us miles on top. More possession, more attempts, more shots, more corners. You know, I think it might have been away at Southampton. We had something like just a ridiculous, like 14 corners and made absolutely no use of them at all.
No.
Couldn't score in open play. We just cannot attack another team's goal at all.
You obviously, because you've had advantage of both. I arrived, I guess, a little bit more pretty optimistic for the Brentford game, because everything that I expect to happen at Arsenal happened. That doesn't excuse the fact that we were very lame, and as you say, you know, simply firing blanks all the way through. I even got the lineup. We're playing the top of the table team. We were flying, or certainly were prior to Qatar. So, but then I looked at, we saw the lineup against Brentford, and I thought, do you know what he's done here? He's gone three at the back. He's gone wing backs. He's giving himself a chance to win, and he knows the way that Brentford play.
Yeah,
and even withstanding that, they beat us from two throw-ins. And it's strange. I didn't arrive at the game thinking this, but I left the game full Diana Ross mode, or self-esteem if you watch Hootenanny. I'm coming out. I not necessarily do it now, but I just think his race is run, David Moyes. Because yeah, those two games would seem a great opportunity for us to find out if the break has worked for him. He's had an opportunity to reassess his situation, to think about how he's using players, the nature and the way they're playing. Because of course, with Arsenal and Brentford, we looked at games with completely different tactics and to a great extent personnel.
Yeah,
and neither worked.
Which
left me wondering at the end if there's anything left that this squad is capable of doing for him.
There's a weird irony in the, you know, if the Football Match doesn't have the word Premier in it, we're quite good. In that winter break, we played Udinese, beaten 3-1, like, you know, who was it, like Cambridge, Colchester or something, beat them, you know, but you'd hope to do that. And then had a 1-0 goal with Fulham, in which we did manage to 1-0 draw with Fulham, in which we did manage to score a goal, I think, from open play. I think Bowen scored in that game from open play.
A rare treat.
The Premier League resumes and it's just business as usual. It felt like everything that might have been accomplished in that winter break was just forgotten. Again, you know, we're not only scoring and winning in that conference, we're scoring like three a game.
I know. I don't know where that comes from. And strangely enough, your point is well made, because even on Friday night, I thought, do you know what? We're playing with tempo and purpose. I liked the start. And then you can see the terrible old school Wimbledon kind of goal. And guess what? It didn't matter, because even though arguably we got back to something like the way we'd started the game during the course of the game, and then you get that terrible second goal given away, crestfallen, Martin Tyler probably would be quite happy to say. Didn't he look like, oh my God, I can't believe I've let this geezer just stroll past me? But the problem was, and you get the sense that Brentford sensed it, is that it's almost like Thomas Frank knew that we couldn't trouble them.
Yeah.
And so their game plan was always going to work, it felt like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But interestingly, well, not really that interesting, but I you know, I watched Match of the Day 2's sort of coverage of it. And oddly, It caused me to change my mind, really. But both Shearer and Danny Murphy, Danny Murphy sort of, I think, is sort of understands the ins and outs of football and, you know, sort of a high functioning former player, but is a bit boring. and Alan Shearer, who I think he only really understood his compartment in football, which is like what man kickball in net, and doesn't really understand the rest of it. Both of them said, sort of independently, though obviously one heard the other say it, if there was one manager that deserves more time, it's David Moyes.
Yeah.
And I was really swung by that. I think when I went away on Friday, I'm a huge fan of David Moyes. I'm not a fan of changing managers. I don't think that's the answer all the time. And I still left on Friday night going, I think maybe it's got to happen. Maybe it's got to happen. Mm. The team on Friday night, we were just, like you say, I think Thomas Frank saw that we were just never going to score. We were just never going to score. We had lots of good possession. We played well. You know, Murphy and Shearer on Match of the Day 2 were at pains to stress that, you know, we played very well for patches.
I thought O'Bonnard made the point just recently that he and obviously he's in a good position to say it, physically a good position to say it, that he likes Declan with Paqueta in the middle of the park.
Yeah.
And patently, there's always been this idea, and it's because in Europe it looks more that way.
Yeah.
That these two very talented men would be ideal alongside each other in a team that's actually creating and scoring chances, probably is the end of that sentence, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I get the point about more time. I'm no Stephen Orgin in these subjects, but I would suggest that after the Brentford game wasn't the time to start the stopwatch. I think that happened. My problem with it is that the time that he would have been given started a long time ago, because it's endemic in our performances and our results. What we saw, and I think this is my problem, what I saw live on Friday against Brentford was what I've been seeing continually. So I'm not having that conversation, he needs more time, in my head after that game. My clock was always ticking, I think. And even though I don't mean I want him out tomorrow, I worry that unless something happens quickly, and I include within this the chance going to Brentford to try and stay in the cup. Please.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, we need anything at this stage, and not getting out, knocked out in the third round would also be a nice thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's a sort of weird situation, because what we are playing well in a lot of these games. Moyes' Match of the Day interview after the Leicester game, which I went to, was the same. It's the same thing. We played well in that game, but the other team scored twice and we didn't score any. And that's how the game ended up. And I think it's almost harder for footballers to kind of deal with a thing where we go, we keep losing these games and we're playing well. And in a way, in Moyes' sort of defence, you know, you see on social media, like, I just can't stand any more of this boring one-dimensional football. Well, a lot of those games, those stats, this is the first season I've really looked at stats to this degree, really. And I think it's partially defending David Moyes and trying to just understand what's going on. These games where we have the most possession, most shots, most corners, most of everything, and still lose, they're the absolute kind of definer of this season. And that must be hugely dispiriting for football teams. But also it sort of says to me, well, you know, this isn't boring, dull, one-dimensional football. We're sort of attacking the other team. We're just not putting the ball in the net. And I think there's a point at which, you know, for me, you can go Moyes' fault, Moyes' fault, Moyes' fault. But there's a point at which the players have got to, if Moyes has got them to the position where they're in the other team's half so much, have so much of the possession of the ball, having so many shots, there's not much more he can do other than kick the ball himself, you know.
Well, I looked at those numbers myself and I can't, I think it says 20 shots. Get what he said on target. Excuse me. And obviously Rice hits the post, so it's not on target, which is obviously the irony of the situation. But the problem is, I don't really remember them there being a save in anger.
No.
And the problem you make is the inherent one, or the pitch you paint is the inherent problem, I think, is that possession isn't necessarily always positive.
No.
And certainly, it doesn't always end up in a decent chance. And it strikes me that we kind of get into a place on the field of play where no one wants to be the guy who takes the chance, or indeed the other guy who then gets the ball, who gives him the ball back, who takes the chance. There's complete and utter lack of confidence, it would seem, when it gets down to that most important bit in the final third, is who's going to be the smart one to make the pass that opens them up? Who's going to be the one who beats a man and takes a shot?
Absolutely.
And it's not happening. And I kind of think that then the problem is, as you say, literally Moyes can't do anything physically on the field of play. But I just wonder if they've just been ground down by the situation. And therefore, sometimes you do arrive at a point when the change can only be management. Because here's my other thing. I don't care about this transfer window. As far as I'm concerned, we've got everybody we need.
You'd hope so, wouldn't you? We'll dig down into a little more of this.
What spot are we filling? Sorry, yes.
Yeah, we'll just carry on with this after this message.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back. Yes, just had to get that break in, Mark. I wasn't just yelling at you to shut up.
Although it was a pretty effective, it worked well. I normally
I have to do that, don't I? I normally have to, when we did them live in the room, I would have to stand on the table and go, "Mark, shut up!"
On my throat. It was a very effective tool it was too. But yeah, I am just on that point. Is what position? But definitely at left back, because with all due respect to Cresswell, he's going to need help soon, and. But other than that, haven't we got very talented players everywhere?
Well, I thought that change to the 3-5-2, placing Paqueta and Rice in a deeper role together was all very encouraging and very good. I think it got us further up the pitch. But the problem is in the attacking personnel, I think. One thing that did seem to happen was, even though you switched 3-5-2, the first time I really saw sort of 3-5-2 for any sort of length of time was when Harry started using it. And
yeah, he did.
He had three at the back. We had David Unsworth, Rio Ferdinand, and Ian Pearce, and then we had
Sinclair in that wide. It's brilliant as a
On the left, you had it was sometimes Lazaridis or Mark Keller. And then on the right, there was Sinclair or Andy Impey.
Yeah.
This is the first time I'd ever really seen it. And it made me think, bloody hell, those guys that have got to be a winger and a left back or a right back, they have to work a disproportionately, large amount of the kind of total possession of the game. But that was just what it was. And what we had on Friday was we sort of had three guys with Benrahma and Bowen still very much hugging the touchline and going, why are you doing that? The left and right backs are supposed to be doing that.
That's so interesting. Is what you never saw I rarely saw a kind of the proper overload that you're meant to get there, which is the overlapping wing back give it's going past Bowen and Benrahma to create the cross. It didn't. They would get clogged up. They would get bottled into spaces there.
Yeah,
and I mean, although the formation made sense, I agree.
Yeah, sometimes on that left hand side, Cresswell, Emerson, and Benrahma were all practically standing around the ball near the other team's corner flag, tapping it amongst themselves while they're being fenced in by, you know. And so I think that the, you know, two things I really thought about Friday was Fornals has really been sacrificed by the rejig to include the new players. And he's one of the best footballers we've got. And he also has tremendous kind of attacking instincts. I don't know if we've got the guys to be a proper left wing back and a proper right wing back. I don't think they have to be super fast necessarily, but they have to play with fullback's instincts. They have to go, if the ball is rolled out to me, I will run all the way up the touchline with the ball. And if that it results in me eventually crossing the ball, so be it. Like Julian Dix used to, like you know, Keith Gillespie did. You know, I think they've got to be wide players, because that's why you make that shape, which then I think frees up. You know, we used to play that with.
That was Arthur's job, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We used to play that under Harry Redknapp. We played that with, Lampard and Lomas in those two Rice and Paqueta positions. But it gave you a number 10, which was Eyal Berkovic. And then in front of him were Hartson and Kitson. And I wonder whether we need Rice and Paqueta there, in front of them Fornals, and in front of them Bowen and Scamacca, or even Benrahma and Scamacca.
Or the natural playmaker is Lanzini in that squad in terms of the man who picks the pass. You're probably right, but equally, I kind of got to that point where, given the fact that formation would seem to make sense that we looked at to start the game against Brentford, and it got a lot of our more flair players on the field of play, it was still flat as a pancake. And so I go back to kind of my problem with it all, is that I don't know if it kind of matters anymore who the 11 are and what shape they play in.
Yeah.
There's something about, there's something in the psychology of it, is that there's a sort of, there's beaten before they, actually they're not beaten before they started, but they were beaten as soon as that first goal went in.
And there's the whole
ground stunk of here we go again, from the field of play to the terraces, didn't it? Not quite so much at the back end when there was no one left.
I've been to a lot of games this season, and I turned to Jim, and this isn't a story about my incisive, intuitive understanding of football, but I did, when we were playing really well in the first kind of 20 minutes before the Brentford goal went in, I was like, this feels like what we've seen a lot this season, being dominant, absolutely, bossing the game, not putting the ball in the net, and then getting hit by sort of killer blows,
totally,
sucker punches.
And I think that, as I say, that I think that immediately impacts the nature of the way that the team played, is that you immediately saw this, it hasn't worked. We've done 20, they've come out off of a massive break, having basically been put in their place by a high-flying Arsenal team. And David Moyes, with a speech that fundamentally would have been saying, we can't lose this one.
Yeah.
This is the big one. We get this right in front of a massive crowd on our return from the winter break, and we are on the front foot again, lads. Have no fear. And we lose to two throwing goals.
Yeah.
With probably not a shot worth describing as threatening their goalkeeper.
No, absolutely. I mean, in that first half,
it's a bizarre scenario.
In the first half, Brentford had two sort of really serious attacks.
Yeah.
Both of them were those throw-ins, and both of them they scored, and we didn't. You know, I mean, saying that, you know, in a sense, all is lost. It doesn't matter who the 11 players are now. Maybe we need to freshen up the manager. I mean, I sort of think that it's within, you know, David Moyes' sort of power to say what any new manager would say. I mean, you know, he is... David Moyes is very cautious and very sort of slow to change. And we've seen that. But he did change on Friday night. We saw the 4-5-2. And I think that, you know, is better for what we have. I think it uses Paqueta much better.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, one thing I thought is that, you know, we can't have the sort of Sebastian Allaire situation again with a talented, you know, international sort of striker who comes to our club and we just don't seem to utilize him very well. And then he just goes away again. I really felt that, like, when we signed Paolo Di Canio, I think Harry Redknapp went into the dressing room and went, here's how we play. You give the ball to Paolo. If you look up, see if you can see him. And then if you can, pass the ball to him. And I feel like, that's the case with Scamacca. I think that he, you know, if you give him a lot of the ball, that's not going to tire him out. He'll want that. It will energize him.
Got a touch, though, did he, Phil? That was the thing.
But I think they didn't pass to him. I mean, it's like, you know, you can say he didn't make himself available. You know, a lot of people kind of go, he doesn't move for the ball. And it's like, well, you don't move if you don't have a sense of that anyone's going to look up and pass it to you.
I think I agree with you totally that we've got a talent there and a young player who looks extraordinarily lost at the moment because he doesn't quite seem to know what he's meant to be doing or indeed why everybody else is doing what they're doing. I mean, in terms of that kind of player, you know, if you use Di Canio as your reference, Paqueta's the reference for me.
Yeah.
Get Paqueta the ball. That's where I think it's more important because the point about Scamacca is that all he's really obliged to have to do is to be available for a decent ball that arrives in and around the six-yard box. Because he can head it and he can shoot. But that never happened. And he kind of aimlessly wandered across their back four in the vain hope of wondering if a ball might come his way.
But the ball came his way when he had that shot near the end, which stung the goalkeeper's hands and was moving in the air and might have gone in. You know, someone managed to find him on the floor then. The rest of the time, they seemed dedicated to just trying to put it on his head. And you know, that was a sort of a symptom of the kind of aimlessness of our attack. Basically, our attacks were, it went down very often the left flank with Benrahma, who... I have to say, maybe I'll have to say a little bit more about him when I finish saying what I'm saying about him now. But going into that corner, someone, either Emerson or Cresswell, offers themselves up for the overlap. Benrahma ignores them, cuts inside, nowhere to go, goes outside, then does the overlap to, like, Cresswell, who is now surrounded by players. Rice then makes himself available, so they play it backwards to Rice. Rice passes it out to the right to Soufal, who then crosses into a penalty area that has every single Brentford player now in it.
That feels like very much the TikTok version nailed on of the way that we set up. I get why Benrahma does it, because the whole point about overlapping players is they're as much the person to pass to as they are a diversion.
Decoy,
that's the gig, you know, that's the way it's meant to happen. And of course, if he does cut, and again, but see, Bowen gets the same finger pointed at him for me,
in this,
because his game has been nullified either by the system or self confidence or all of the or none of the above. But either way you look at it, our two wide men who have, particularly Bowen, of course, have proven so effective and efficient, and in terms of goals, particularly Bowen, have ceased to be effective at all.
Yeah.
Once you've got a big centre forward and the two guys that are meant to be helping him in and around him, either with crosses or assists or passes, not actually delivering, it's no surprise that we are sort of like that were firing blanks.
Yeah, I mean, those balls onto his head, which were a huge tactic on Friday, were sort of insane. He's surrounded by other footballers. Yeah. It's not going to reach his head. It's just, I mean, the notion of a kind of Duncan Ferguson or, I guess, Alan Shearer type striker from the 1990s was when we played 4-4-2 and there'd be wingers like Keith Gillespie running up the wing. And not all of the opposition team had got back by the time you crossed it and then Alan Shearer headed it in or Duncan Ferguson headed it in. This is everyone's back because everyone's had a touch of the ball in the attacking team. And now the other team are all camped out in the penalty area. You can't cross it.
Of course, now we're returning to that, strange enough, as you pointed out earlier, outside of Europe, where now we're remembering quite how many goals we did get from headers from corners.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
So, yeah. I mean, we won a lot of points in the last couple of years from dead balls.
Yeah.
From great
yeah.
headers of the ball, like O'Bonner and Dawson. Strange enough, our two centre halves more than necessarily our striker. So
yeah.
So yes, it's not. It appears to be a bit of a blunt weapon. Again, I just wonder that for me strikes at the heart of this is. Where's the verve? Where's the imagination? And I just think it's all lacking at the moment. It's I couldn't open it because of course I think it's bad luck. But my mum again got me the official West Ham calendar, which is now officially opened, and it is John Moncur is right. January,
right?
Or Janny Monk as I'm going to call him. And I kind of thought I'll open it up, and there's John Moncur in his big, enormous blue Buffon sleeves.
Yeah.
And we're looking back to the heart of what you're talking about. You know, is he done? Is there still time for Moyes to save it? If you put aside a cup game at Brentford, and I went to us when they demolished us in the league there, and I hold not much hope out for the way that Thomas Frank knows how to play us. Leeds, Wolves, and Everton this month.
Those are the three now, aren't they?
I mean, we're now playing our relegation rivals in the next three league games.
Yeah, I think this.
Let's not pretend otherwise.
Yeah, this is the clutch of three games with sort of Moyes with the sort of Damocles over him. I think, you know, the fact that I actually felt a little bit more positive, strangely, after, like I said, Danny Murphy and Alan Shearer's sort of comments saying that, you know, if ever there was a manager not to let go, it's David Moyes, because actually I think that. And I know you have to head off soon, Webber. So we'll wrap things up fairly quickly. David Moyes' Everton of the early noughties was sort of the template team for me, and they didn't panic and fire him when things sort of went badly. And he managed to sort of redeem himself or the team every time. You know, they got off to some bad starts, there would be grumblings, and then they'd end up finishing about seventh or something, you know. So I feel that there is he is a man who can do that. At the end of this weekend, we are not and were not in the bottom three. We're not, you know, the team that's bottom at Christmas and therefore is almost destined to go down. I feel a little bit more sort of positive about it because I sort of think that he might be able to do it. We're not actually...
Well, he did it before, didn't he, Phil?
Yeah.
He did exactly this job...
Twice.
Before.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So he was brought in to do this job, then let go. So the man that you bring in to replace David Moyes, to replace him, to get your team out of relegation problems would be David Moyes.
Yeah, yeah.
I get that point. I suppose my argument might be tempered by the fact is that how the hell we got ourselves into the position in the first place?
Yeah.
And the answer is, again, back to this time thing. I don't think this is a problem that has occurred this season. I think it has been embedded for too long.
It's been a series of dominoes.
It leaves us with arguably this weird scenario. And again, I don't know. I don't think I'm necessarily saying gone in front of before Leeds. I'd like to see how that one goes. But when we play Everton, his old club, Frank Lampard turns up with Everton, possibly with both managers needing that game to save their respective jobs. Yeah.
They should make that pay-per-view, shouldn't they?
Come on.
But it, you know, I thought sort of domino number one, a bit like sort of 2003 when we went down, was like the manager was just not in a position to predict that two or three players were going to come back playing so badly. You know, Bowen is a sort of particular example, I think, but also like Rice was not very good at in the first couple of games of the season, but he has found his form. Suchek's form has, you know, sort of evaporated a bit this season. And I think that was the kind of first of the sort of dominoes to go over, you know, that if we'd beaten Nottingham Forest, I think this season would have been completely different. And that was a game that we felt we should win. And as has been the kind of keynote of this season, we have lost games by kind of a single goal in many instances that we sort of deserved, with heavy quote marks around the word deserved, to win.
Yeah, but there's the thing, Bill, and it's back to that point, you know, much in the way that when we were doing the podcast together, your foot would be on my throat so that we could get to the ad break properly. What we've not done is we've not gone and finished off teams in situations where we had that opportunity.
Yeah.
And we've lacked the stuff that Moyes that we had under Moyes in that first full season. When you had the sense that we had what it would take to get the game won, has simply disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know where to look on the field of play. To find, I mean, strangely enough, the thing that disappeared as we speak started his job today, which is Mark Noble.
That's right. Yeah,
who's turned up on a, let's be honest, as we're talking about this one, he's turned up on a bank holiday for his first day. And I just, funnily enough, withstanding all of this conversation, Mark Noble's now the bloke in a shirt and tie who gets to deal with this situation.
Yeah,
he's bowled up, put his attaché case on the desk, and said, "Okay, so what's the first job? Only the biggest one." And I'd be interested to see if his physical presence there, particularly with his management team, can change. And the next few weeks, as I say, I'm not screaming out, but I think he's done.
And interesting.
I don't know where that lands would be in terms of what games I expect to see. I want to see. I think he's got to take the Leeds game. No way you change it now. And if we get some at Leeds, who went and got some at Newcastle,
yeah,
that's a start.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we'll do predictions. I would like to see him. I think he has to tell the players that are not Scamacca to get the ball to Scamacca, because I think we're not seeing what he can do because he's not seeing enough of the ball. And I don't think that he is sort of hiding or not moving or lazy, which is what you see quite a lot on social media. He wouldn't have got himself into the Italian national team if he was lazy, you know.
No, I think it just needs more company up there. You know, the problem is you could give him the ball where he stands now, which is back to goal with a centre half, you know, trying to guide him away, and the ball either will stick or it won't. He can get a lot of those, but what we really mean about that is get him in dangerous places, but with players around him, and we just don't do that.
I would like on Wednesday to see those instructions acted out, and I would like to see Pablo Fornals replace, controversially, Saeed Benrahma, who I am really seeing game by game, even though he is far improved this season in that he's discovered dribbling a football, which he didn't do before. I'm really starting to sense why he is a championship player. You know,
I wouldn't mind seeing Fornals play out there at all either. It'd be interesting to see if he goes on the road though and doesn't revert back to a 4-4-2, and whether he decides Suchek is the man to guard a point.
Yeah, I wonder.
As he did against Arsenal. So much of this is interesting now because I think David Moyes, if he was just being able to think the way that he would want to think, would have a relatively safe 4-4 2-1 team out there. I think I left a player out there. But certainly, I think Souček and Ricey would still favour. But I don't know that if it, but I think, yeah, because he did it against Arsenal.
But I think the Arsenal game was before the Brentford game. So I think,
yeah, that's what I mean. And so now he's, you know, in his ideal thinking would be those two. But now he's thinking, much as I think it went on Friday, is partly governed by opinion outside of his own personal choices.
Yeah, but I don't think
I think this is where it's getting interesting with him, is that that felt like a team to make the crowd happy, but it didn't.
But he's not Sam Allardyce. He's not going to go, you were crying out for me to do this thing and I did it and it went wrong and that's your fault, not my fault. You know,
I'm not saying, I don't think he's going to verbally do it, but I have a certain suspicion that away at Leeds, he'll think that a point is excellent and he's probably right. And I think we'll see a more solid lineup. And that would include Fornals.
I think he would keep,
Not Emerson.
Do you think he would drop Paqueta then to put Souček in?
Yeah, possibly.
Do you? I don't think so. I don't think he'd do that. I think practically Paqueta, because, you know, as sort of Jim's pointed out a couple of times, Paqueta was sort of our fourth choice for this kind of playmaker number 10 thing. And I think we went so far down our list that Paqueta is not a playmaker. You know, if we'd gone one further down, we would have bought a goalkeeper to be our number 10. You know, Paqueta is a sort of central midfielder. He is the Souček upgrade, I think. He plays for Brazil. Souček plays for the Czech Republic. He is a Souček upgrade. And I think sort of Moyes was really hoping he'd be a number 10, but I don't think he is one. I think he's...
Well, if he's a Souček upgrade, Souček, when he was playing well, which he isn't... won tackles in his own half, passed the ball to his own players in the middle third,
yeah,
and appeared in the box to score goals.
Yeah. Well, we would hope
that's what Souček used to do. Souček hasn't done that for ages.
Right.
And well, so if Paqueta becomes that Souček and better, that'll do.
Yeah. I'm very conscious of that. We have to wrap this up, Wello.
Yes, sir.
Predictions for the Leeds game?
I'm going to give us a point. I suspect we can't not concede. And I think it'll be 1-1.
I think it'll be a point as well. So I'm going to take 2-2. All right. That's probably it for today. I know you have to get away. And in fact, I think they're recording another podcast after this one. So there's all sorts of reasons we have to wrap this up. Great talking to you, Webbo, and I'll see you very soon. There's quite a lot more we could have talked about in that, because it is a sort of long, complex issue. But, we got through what we got through. My name's Phil Whelans. With me this week will be Mark Webster. Oh, you're
Thank
not
you
going to say
much,
goodbye?
All.
Say
happy, goodbye, happy Jenny month to you all.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy New Year, everyone. Come on, you Irons.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.